Okay. Now that we've got the technology under control, what shall we look at? Krista.
I was reading a book by a surgeon who had a near-death experience. This is his follow-up book, and he's talking about that what those experiences open up for people is a concept of the immaterial world.
And concept of the immaterial world.
Yes, and we in our world we get so locked into the material world, mm-hmm. And that there was a line of something like, and it you knock people knock on the door of the immaterial world, and you wait.
Mm-hmm.
And that I feel that that's what we are doing with sitting.
Uh-huh.
And with practice, that we stop for the moments that we stop. And it's what we're doing. It feels like the practice focus this week of having a thing where you stop.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just stopping and sitting and uh-huh. relaxing.
Uh-huh.
And that to stop, especially in the anytime, but in the middle of the day, it's different from, you know, mm-hmm. like a regular my regular sitting practice in the beginning or the end. That's what it is that's what we are doing, is we're all stopping, and by stopping, we're knocking on the door of
uh-huh.
the material world.
Uh-huh. So the practice focus for the week and this book brought two things together, which
yeah.
is in when we sit, we basically stop and knock on the door of the material and make that movement from, I project, a very conditioned orientation where we're in the material to invite the immaterial, whatever that is.
Yes, because you could say that the material world is in itself conditioning.
The material world is in itself conditioning. Aha, so basically we are in the conditioned system, which is what locks us into the material. And if we talk about what the Buddha talked about, right, attending to that causes us to ignore what is so.
Right.
And the movement of sitting is to actually make that movement out of the conditioned world to invite and open and be aware of what is.
Yeah, which then, of course, completely transforms the material world.
Which then completely makes it disappear or not exist.
Well, even when you go back to it and engage with it, it's a different,
uh-huh.
The shift is not the same.
Uh-huh, so we come from a different place. There's a transformation that happens when we invite that, when we knock on the immaterial world and invite it and be in relationship with that, then when we come back to the real world, then it's different.
Well, yes, yes, that's right. The tricky thing is, as everybody knows it, to stop and knock.
To stop and knock. Yeah, that's why a practice focus like that is interesting to practice with, because we add it to our repertoire of practice.
Right.
And that sitting in the middle of the day becomes a practice like that,
yeah.
where it becomes the invitation to knock.
Yeah.
And we integrate that into the way we are.
Yeah.
Thank you. Was there more?
Well, I feel that it's in the material world that we, you know, our experience of our own shortcomings or the karma, that like that's where they play out. So that's where the holding and the pain is.
Mm-hmm.
And in the stopping and the knocking, or in like in practical method, where like when the things I teach, where we tune into the function of our body, which is in another type of just stopping and
mm-hmm.
attending, that in that same, well, I guess that there are many angles, there are many places you can knock.
There are many places you can knock.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But what you're noticing, I project, is the process is the same.
The process is the same. It is the willingness to stop the movement of the material and participation in the material world, to stop that
mm-hmm.
and be able to knock
mm-hmm.
and then go into
mm-hmm.
another place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is the willingness to knock.
Yeah, the willingness to knock.
is what we practice cultivating.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. It's all very interesting, right? Because we something causes us to become aware that that's the process that gives us access to the immaterial world, and then we do it, and then we recognize what it does in the transformation, and then we develop that willingness to do it because we know what the process is.
Mm-hmm. I think it's often some kind of pain that is the reminder.
Uh-huh.
Some type of pain.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be pain on many different levels or type, mm-hmm. but some type of discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, well, this isn't so great.
Mm-hmm.
And the way to great is not through the material world. The way to great is something knocking mm-hmm. on the door.
Mm-hmm. So there's something that an awareness of some discomfort or pain that is the cue
mm-hmm.
to move into knocking on that material world, on the door of the immaterial world, mm-hmm. and not to engage with the material world.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That and then the reminder of my commitments.
And the reminder of your commitments, the yeah. structure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you. Kevin.
I love that. That was a really good conversation. It reminds me of a couple of quotes from the practice intensive this week.
Uh-huh. For those of us who don't know what that is, there's a year-long retreat going on, and this week we have a practice focus on a cup of tea, the ritual of rest. Okay.
Yeah, the one that keeps playing through my—it's such a beautiful quote, the Usan quote.
Yes.
The sounds of the tea being made invite the peach blossoms to peep in through the window.
Yes.
It's such a beautiful line. It makes me shiver just right now. I'm just saying. I was hoping for some help in continuing to look at how sensations play their role in the karmic experience of eventual behavior that maintains the whole system.
Mm-hmm. So let me pause there because that's quite an interesting thesis. How sensations play the role in the behavior that keeps the karmic system in place.
Hmm.
Okay.
Yes. And what I've been seeing so far is that when it's all slowed down, or maybe perhaps when it's something relatively new, a relatively new experience, that isn't built, or there is not a lot of history of an identity around it and mm-hmm. sort of conditioned response to that sensation, then it's like, yeah, sensation tends to lead to feeling or emotion, which tends to lead to thoughts or conversation about it, which then sort of seems to motivate the behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm seeing is that in the really core karmic process of suffering that this being is involved in, that there's such an identity, there's so much conditioned sort of orientation around the whole thing, that it just seems to skip, it seems to bypass the need for the conversation. It's like the sensation arises, and maybe it even skips the feeling and emotion.
Uh-huh.
It's just sensation arises, and then there's this identity structure around that, within which behaviors just are the only option.
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, you know, if somebody is very angry and is experiencing the sensations that are associated with anger, there may not even be the need in that case for there to be some conversation around something. I mean, somebody says something and there's just there's just a reaction to it.
So if I can catch up with you, you're aware of two different things, that in cases where there's something new, there hasn't been a chance for the identity to be created around that, and therefore the sequence of stimulus to reaction is different than when there's something that's core and karmic that gets triggered, in which case the sequence is not so apparent, it's just a reaction.
Yeah, there's, and that's where I was a few weeks ago, and I think now I'm seeing that there it's not just sensation to reaction, but there is that identity which is triggered.
Yes.
There is that orientation which pre-exists the sensation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's not that the sensation causes the behavior. Yes. It's that the sensation
is at the root of the identity that's sitting on top of it.
And so it's just like a reminder. It sort of closes that. I don't know.
So it's the difference between if the river is flowing and there is already an existing river bank that's silted, the river will flow around it. If it's just flowing and it's creating the river bank, then the process of flowing creates the river bank. So it's either that there's a pre-existing identity structure that creates the reaction. But if it isn't karmic, or if it isn't a particular pre-existing structure, then there's a different response.
Hmm.
Well, that's interesting. What are you seeing about that? I mean, are you seeing that as a process?
I'm seeing that I'm sort of, I've been sort of framing this door in looking at this closer and closer, and now sort of finding ways to step through it,
uh-huh.
Finding ways to actually practice with it, and uh-huh. not just, you know, entertain it as like sort of philosophically interesting.
Entertain it as philosophically interesting, or believe it
right.
as something personal.
Right, or permanent, like,
or
oh,
permanent.
This is something that happens
uh-huh.
to me. So it's looking at, I guess, how, in one case, to really familiarize myself with the sensations.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this experience that I was definitely having a week to 10 days ago, and that this person has a lot of just very, very intense associations that are, it's a feeling of anxiety
mm-hmm.
that reaches such a level that it's like the image I have is like being in a room with like a dozen different stereos going at full volume with different styles of music
uh-huh.
and trying to do calculus or something.
calculus in the middle of distraction.
Yeah, I can't
okay.
even do calculus in a quiet room. So that's the image I have of what my experience is. It's like, and within that, it's, yeah, anything that comes in just gets... there's just not even the opportunity to do anything different. So
mm-hmm.
anyway, I'm just seeing how really exploring the sensations is one way
mm-hmm.
to disidentify from the emotions that seem associated, because the sensations are not the emotions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the sensations are not the emotions. And I think, if I may project, I project what you are doing as awareness practice. Right? Because instead of just believing what is so, there's a lot of attention that is being brought to the process.
Mm-hmm.
And as we pay closer and closer attention, what we get to see is how it all gets put together and how it works. And in seeing how that gets put together and how it works, the insight drops in that it might not be as monolithic as we experience it to be,
mm-hmm.
or as permanent as we experience it to be. And there's openings to ways of being different. And what you're describing is that process of not believing anything, not avoiding anything, of, as you said, going through it.
Mm-hmm.
And in going through it and attending to it and coming from that place of dhyana, as we talk about it, right, the practice of inquiry, then there's a different orientation that we can have to what is so.
Yeah. And it's become more and more fascinating to trace back, when the conversation is there, to trace back to find the sensation that caused,
uh-huh.
that led to it. Because
yes.
my experience is that it's generally there. It's something in the body.
There's always an identity
yeah.
that's, the, or there's always a sensation that create that is associated to the identity that is, so it's either a priori or afterwards,
mm-hmm.
right? But you can see how it's constructed,
mm-hmm.
and that's actually liberating.
Absolutely.
Because the construction is the construction, and now there's another option that's available. brings us back to the Yusan quote in the conversation that we talked about, right? Because if that isn't the only way of being, then we can invite. The attention has collapsed to that particular reaction, and now there's the opening for the peach blossoms. We're not drawn into the gravitational pull of that particular orientation to life, and other orientations open up.
It's interesting that I used the image of framing a door, and the discussion was around knocking at the door.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I suppose that's
the joy within the Rumi quote, right? The joy within response.
What is that quote?
I butcher it, but I'll find it for you. But it's when you knock, we've been knocking, something to the effect of we've been knocking at all these doors to find the joy, and the door opens inside and the joy is within. Yeah, the peach blossoms were never outside.
Right. Right. They never needed the invitation, but
yeah.
Maybe they did. That's all they needed is the invitation.
Yeah, the sounds of the tea being made.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Scott.
I was on a practice call this morning, and we were playing around with this image of a big open field and a thicket.
A big open field and a thicket.
Yeah. And this week I've just had an incredible opportunity with some new tasks and some additional tasks to watch how, I guess the experience I'm having is that I'm always in the big open field, and that the thicket just comes into existence with my attention on it. And like watching the thicket form, watching my, like a virtual reality, watching a guy go through it. He's the good person to go through it, actually, working really hard, and then pausing and directing my attention, and the thicket falls apart, and I'm in the open field again. And then kind of that process back and forth.
So you're always in the open field.
Mm-hmm.
The thicket comes into existence. The identity is around the dealing with the thicket and being the good person to deal with it. And then when we redirect the attention, we recognize that the thicket is illusory and that you're back in the field.
Yeah, and I guess when you're reflecting that back, I was seeing how important that process is to go back and forth, to watch the thicket form, to watch the attachment to that, and then to stop and watch it dissolve, and then get caught up again and watch it dissolve. There's something about, you know, because of course this, you know, making a little hand signal by my head, the voices want us to always get somewhere.
Yes.
Well, I just always want to be in the field.
Yeah.
But the important process is to go back and forth.
Uh-huh.
I don't really know exactly why. But...
Well, so let me reflect that. Something dropped in when you said it. So the voices are attached to a particular experience, which is the field is open and spacious, and therefore the thicket is what you need to get rid of. And so there's an attachment to a particular experience, because the conditioning is the thicket is not desirable, somehow unacceptable.
Yeah.
And there's an intuition that it's the process of moving between those two is somehow important. And what dropped in when you said that is because from the conditioned perspective, there's attachment to one way of experience. But if you look at it from life's perspective, the movement is important for life to become aware of the impermanence of the thicket and the complete okayness of moving between those two.
Yes.
In other words, the thicket, the process of being attached is what's being worn away.
Yes.
To accept life however it is, whether it's in the field or in engagement with the thicket. And what needs to disappear is the process of attachment. And unless we become comfortable moving between the two, that process doesn't get worn away.
Yeah.
It's a complete gift from life.
It is a huge gift from life. When you were saying that, what came up was it's proving that, well, one, that I can direct the attention, that there is choice, and that the voices can't control me. And I kind of need to be able to go back and forth to where, as you said, to be okay with anything. And then, in that case, I'm, boy,
It's truly being in the field.
It's truly being in the field. And so, thank you, that was great. It's truly being in the field. And so I just had another experience similar to the kind of a variation of that field moment with the recorder just now.
Uh-huh.
So, to this person's karma, publicly looking like he didn't follow through with his responsibility is, it's funny, if you asked me outside of here, I would say, well, it's not great, but it's okay.
Uh-huh.
But the reaction that I just had internally was completely unacceptable.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. So you were aware, you were watching that karmic identity having the sensations and experience of, oh my God.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And then I watched it and it come, I did everything right. I changed the batteries before the group. I had somebody come in and start it.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why the memory, it's like I just watched that. And then I watched, it was like the whole thing was like a giant fire just went.
The thicket came in.
Yeah, like somebody lit the thicket on fire.
Uh-huh.
And it was just a big flame in my body. I'm like, I was just noticing a sweat coming down my back.
Uh-huh.
What the heck? And the first person speaks, and I'm like, okay, all your attention on the person. And it's like we were just talking about the calculus and the noise.
Uh-huh.
I can't hear the person through the fire.
Mm-hmm.
It was just so loud. And then the image of the field came in, and then when the image of the field came in, I realized I was not the fire.
Uh-huh.
But it was still hot and loud. And it was like, okay, and I just kept breathing and staying with that image, and then all of a sudden what came in was that I don't even know if there was an action, but all of a sudden the fire had a ring around it, like a video camping, and it was way over there in the field.
Uh-huh.
Like it was just fine, it was just a little fire over there, but not like up against me, like burning my face and making me sweat.
Well, it's really cool because it's such a process of practice that you're describing, because at some point many, many years ago, we would have collapsed under that experience and the weight of the self-hate, but the practice of being able to disidentify really, really quickly, I mean, how quickly was that? That was less than 30 seconds, right? That we are able to use all the practice we've done to redirect the attention and move away from the fire and not take it personally, and know that we can do that.
Yes.
In other words,
yes.
Previously, the sense of well-being is entirely tied to the approval of the fulfillment of the responsibility. And that karma burns away to know that you can be okay even if something like that happens, because there's the grounding, that opening, the experience of the field, of the unconditional,
yes,
where it might be momentary that we get identified with the sensations, but we move through that rapidly enough to know that there's unconditional acceptance.
Yeah, exactly what was coming up when you, because it even tried, when you first started out saying, we would collapse from the self-hate, I watched this mechanism that's gone on my whole life when something like that would happen, which is, it starts to say, just shut down,
uh-huh.
Don't say anything, get through the group, get through your jobs, and I don't know what, go hide in your hermitage or something.
Yes.
And it's like, that just seems so unbelievable. Of course I'm not going to do that, because it's so clear, thinking about Mara, and the Buddha,
yes,
putting the hand on the earth, that I'm here to wake up and end suffering.
Yes.
So I'm going to do everything I can to put my attention here, and I'm going to talk about it and expose it. And that's just a given at this point.
Yes.
Like, that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly how it's going to unfold or what I'm going to say, but I'm going to show up to that process.
Yes.
And I think you're right. That comes from a grounding that that we are the field.
Yeah.
We are that place beyond wrongdoing and rightness.
Yeah. And that we've moved to a much... It's tipped up to some extent, right? That we've moved into that grounded ability to unconditionally accept what conditioning finds unacceptable.
Yes.
Right? Because it's conditioning that finds it unacceptable. You're not unacceptable.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just like the thicket experience. Yeah, bringing everything into this. Because pretty much every day on at least one recording, if not several, I say I choose unconditional love.
Yes.
What was just coming up was how life just orchestrates everything so perfectly.
Yes.
It's like amazing, practice morning, just feeling, the vibration, and then it just, this is like life's like, this is a perfect place to drop in
yes.
some nasty karma and just, you know, so you yes. get to see it all.
Well, and the, how the attitude changes, right, where it's a gift. It's a process to burn the karma up that we're willing for, that we open to. We're knocking on that door of the immaterial because it's shifted from, oh my God, why is this happening to me? To I'm choosing to wake up and end suffering. Bring it on totally. Because I want to move to the field and burn every thicket in sight.
Yeah.
Right? And go through that experience of doing that.
Yeah.
And it really underlines something important for us in practice, right, Scott? Because what you're talking about is the karma tends to shut us down. It tends to take us out of life, to hide, to collude. And what you recognize is the movement through it is total engagement, total participation, total being here, and we're back in life. And when we're back in life, the thicket's a residue.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's it. It's all it is.
It's all it is. It just becomes a residue. And the moment we make that movement back into the field, we can actually let go of it. Mm-hmm. Not believe the reality of it, but just know that it's the intangibility of the illusion. But till we make that movement back in and engage, because it's in the engagement in the field that the thicket's the illusion.
Yeah.
Within the field, the thicket's not an illusion. I mean, within the thicket, it's not an illusion, it's fire. Yeah?
You know, and just a couple of quick things. I'm glad you pointed out that residue piece, because somebody could get hooked into, it's not working.
Yes.
But I just think intuitively knew, because I could feel that residue,
yes.
that that's okay.
Yes.
Like, you know, even at yes. a retreat where we had yes. a residue pump.
Yes.
So it was like, we're okay, there's a residue.
Yes.
And I don't actually have to do anything about that because life will just clear that out.
Yes, and experience teaches you that the way to get out of the residue is to engage further, right? Mm-hmm. As the, I think Ishwaran says, the cure to boredom is more attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Not to quit, but to attend even more.
Yeah.
And then we're through it.
You know, the other thing, just going through the thicket, and what I was watching about that is somebody... something loved that.
Uh-huh.
Like they wanted, I mean, the dualities that he was being put in, I mean, you could just see ego just eating that up.
Uh-huh.
And I guess what was great is, again, it felt like me going through the thicket and like, oh, ooh, but I'm a good person. I love struggle. And go, wait, that actually isn't me.
Uh-huh.
You know, and again, because I'm practicing being in the field, I could see that operating. Mm-hmm. And disidentify, and, mm-hmm. and even though that's familiar, mm-hmm. it doesn't make it any less me.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't.
Uh-huh. So there's the awareness that identity actually loved the struggle, but there's also the awareness that it was to perpetuate the identity that there was the love of struggle.
Yeah.
But you're choosing not to struggle, you're choosing a different experience.
Yeah, and that choice was coming in where I could actually see the identities, like another movie we watched, hanging out on the side, ready to jump in to fulfill these tasks
uh-huh.
that they can do, you know, the articulate uh-huh. one, the funny one, the one you can organize. And they were just sitting there waiting, but I didn't actually have to engage with them.
Yes.
Or be them.
Uh-huh.
But they could just sort of be there on the side.
Uh-huh.
And then the longer, I mean, I just sort of noticed that brought my attention here, and then I don't think they were really there at all.
Uh-huh. 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 So there's the awareness of the identities, but the identities do not... In other words, it's going back to an earlier conversation. If we recognize the karmic impulses or pressures or tendencies from sensation to identity to behaviors, we can actually get to a place in practice where they are there, but they don't have to engage in existence to perpetuate themselves. I mean, we recognize
yes. Yes.
that the only reason that they exist is to keep existing. And if we don't indulge those grooves of yeah. karma, then we are free to be in different ways in life.
Yes.
And those ways in life don't lead to the suffering.
Yeah. I like how you said that, different ways of being in life. So there's not like something's better than the other.
Yes.
It's just, it's the process of freedom. They get
yes.
a choice.
Yes.
Because identities are like, tag me in. Come on. I'm ready.
Yes.
I'm ready. Let me know.
Oh, it's that's like, such a great image.
Yeah.
yeah.
You know, and it's like, I think I'm going to practice something else.
Yes.
But not dismissing or there's anything wrong or pushing away.
Yeah.
Just as you said, there's other ways of being, and that's what I'm here to
yeah.
learn how to do.
Yes. To have the freedom to for life to respond instead of the karma to respond, and
yes.
to be locked into the karmic way of response as the only response.
Yeah. Gosh, and I gotta stop myself here because I can't.
Well, continue the Sentai group with Scott, huh?
thank you.
Well, do you want to say? I won't reflect.
Yeah, it just feels like the process of saving the human.
It's what we're here for.
Tremendous gratitude for that.
Thank you. Mickey?
Well, a similar experience that happened to me this morning, and it's highlighting what I've been looking at around resistance and control.
Resistance and control.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I was attempting to do something this morning in a time crunch that was not working. Mm-hmm. Technology was not cooperating at a moment when it needed to.
Yes, it always does that, doesn't it?
And I just, what I was watching, it actually was a very small problem because it involved a phone and some calls, and fortunately the household had 3 phones to choose from, so if one wasn't working, there were still 2 options, and there were 2 that were needed, so it was fine. And I just watched, because of the time factor, as the clock was ticking and trying to negotiate how this was going to work, all this sensation arose.
Uh-huh.
You know, there was a labeled anxiety, mm-hmm. although it wasn't really about it's like some part of me knew that this will either work or it won't, and uh-huh. if it doesn't, it's not that big a deal.
Uh-huh.
And yet there was this just immediate rising of this very familiar sensation
mm-hmm.
that is, I think, related to being out of control.
Uh-huh. So this, the sensation of being out of control.
This is not the way it should be.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I know how it should be. This is not the way it should be. And uh-huh. that produces pretty strong sensation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this is just like a mini look at a very big process that this mm-hmm. being does.
Mm-hmm.
And because I was then in a practice opportunity where I could look at that, I was looking at it, and what the resistance part is, I think, that what the resistance comes up around is that feeling. I don't want to feel that way. I shouldn't feel that way. The situation doesn't warrant feeling that way.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And therefore, it's the feeling that comes up around it that is the bigger problem than what was actually not working.
Uh-huh. So the situation, it wasn't that the situation was a problem, because there's an awareness of whether this is either going to work or this is not going to work. Regardless, it's going to be okay. But it produces a certain level of sensation, and the awareness is the resistance is to feeling that sensation, because there's a judgment that the sensations are not warranted for the level of content that is being experienced.
Right, right, mm-hmm. right. And not only are they not warranted, they are not appropriate.
They're not appropriate, desirable, acceptable.
They're not desirable, they're not acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
They're not in the condition what a normal person should be experiencing mm-hmm. in this moment.
Mm-hmm. 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 Because a normal person who is practiced,
calm.
Who does practice,
right.
is supposed to be calm and
right.
not have these intense
right.
sensations.
Nothing bothers them.
You know, Mickey, when you started talking about it, I thought you were going in a different direction. So may I just say what dropped
sure.
in? Because to me, when there's that sense of something that has to get done, like in a timetable mm-hmm. that feels opposite to how we think it needs to be.
Right.
Those sensations are often the falling away of conditioning and the rush of life ready to deal.
Well, that's interesting.
Which conditioning would say we don't want to feel.
Right.
We want to be flatlined and numb
right.
and not alive and
right.
intensely ready and
right.
present in
right.
the moment.
Right.
To deal with whatever it is that
right.
how life wants to manifest in expression, to be in the moment.
Right. Well, that's really interesting, because in the most recent Musings newsletter, you know, it talked about maybe that it's just that we're meant to feel
yeah.
these senses of aliveness and excitement, and it's not related to content, but that that's what life, that's how life would express mm-hmm. through the being.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that that was kind of a revelation to me, and also the fact that when I saw that, I thought, what conditioning does or wants to do and attempts to do and is very successful at is depressing
yes.
that energy
mm-hmm.
so that we don't feel it
mm-hmm.
and so that when we do feel it, it presents it as a problem.
Yes. Yeah. Wow. When we do feel it, the story is we want to avoid that.
Right.
Let's resist that. That. Let's be controlled.
Yes. Let's be controlled, which brings me back to the other word I was using, the intense need for the conditioned being to be in control, which is impossible.
Yes. Well, which is impossible and cruel in the sense of the redirection of the story and the narrative to, mm-hmm. well, I need to suppress everything in order not to feel alive.
Right. And right. I need to know how everything is going to work in order not to
feel
those
alive.
Feelings, you know? So, mm-hmm. like, it didn't matter that the phone calls were working out in a different way. The problem was they weren't working out the way they were supposed to.
Yes. Yeah. So it's also...
Who cares?
Yes. It reveals all of the conditioned
yes.
processes,
yes.
right? Wanting it to be different than it is.
Wanting the conditions to be different, wanting the feelings to
be
different.
Wanting the person to be
right.
different.
Right.
Everything.
Yes.
And if we drop all of that, what we experience is the aliveness and intensity and
yeah.
energy of life that
yeah.
we could just ride for whatever it is that life wants to manifest, either have the phone call or not have the
right.
phone call,
right.
but be with it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I guess the practice could be just to welcome the sensations.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know,
I mean, they're,
juice of life.
They're there right now just in talking about it.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
just, I mean, they're there.
Yeah. And they're always there, perhaps.
Yes, perhaps
just not,
they're always there and not allowed to
yes.
be aware that they're there.
In other words, we don't get to be in touch with it. We're in a flatlining conversation.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. I mean, that. So when conditioning wants to talk about moving with greater ease and peace through life, it means
yes.
to not have those experiences.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Rather than to be perfectly fine with whatever.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's so important, right? That
yeah.
that the practice of ease is taken over by the conditioned system to mean the flatline peace,
yes.
not the ease that comes with complete alignment with
yes.
the energy of the universe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, and there was one other thing that came through that I'm starting to go away. Let me see if I can... Just that I think that the process of conditioning depressing those sensations is what makes them feel so, quote, intolerable when they are felt.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, in other words, it's if we change the pronouns that we often do as a practice, it is intolerable to ego.
Yeah, yeah.
It is not intolerable to the being.
Right.
In fact, it's not intolerable or unacceptable to the being because the being is containing them.
Right?
In that moment, it's there. Where else is it?
Where are they
going to
be?
Yes.
Where are they going to
be? Yes, it belies that's the experience versus belief, right? The belief is I can't contain it. But it's there. We're containing it completely. Oh, I mean, it's completely there.
Aha.
So, yeah.
That's a very important thing right there.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Benny.
I keep having this image come up that feels related to what we're talking about. I've done a lot of walking in England.
Uh-huh.
And so in England, you can walk like through people's pastures and...
Yeah, these little convenient stiles that you climb over.
You climb over stiles.
Yes.
And so that's how you get over the fences, you get over stiles. And periodically, you come to a place where the fences have been removed and there's a stile. So
no fence, just the stile. Okay.
And you know, you can
gateless
tell,
gates, Penny.
You can tell there's an option. You can go over the stile if you want,
uh-huh.
or you can go around.
Yes.
It feels a lot like what we're talking about.
Yes.
And it's sort of like a thicket, you know, that, that, I mean, literally, there's an image of something, an obstacle in a large field.
Yes.
And
or an imagined obstacle in a large field.
Imagined obstacle in a large field. It may not have to be an obstacle, but it may be an obstacle if that's where my focus is.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so one of the things I was looking at was, well, I appreciated what you were saying about thinking that somehow the thicket has to be removed.
Yes.
Remembering that the thicket is in the field. Just like, you know, somebody thought that sow didn't need to be removed. But it exists in a large field, and it doesn't have to be all that the attention is on.
Uh-huh. So it doesn't have to, so the focus of the attention doesn't have to be on the style. In other words,
Or avoiding the style.
It just simply is there. In other words, may I project, Penny, that the conditioned system is making something off of it which it might not be.
Right.
And because the attention is focused in that way, that is the only interpretation.
Right.
But if the attention wasn't focused in that way, it could be a different interpretation. Oh, right. It's just sitting there in the middle. I could go around it, I could go over it. It's not an obstacle.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. One of the things that I love about practice is it is so distinct from conditioning. I can really tell I'm caught in conditioning when there's only one way.
Uh-huh.
When there
yes.
simply aren't any options, when there's no possibilities. And from the standpoint of practice, everything's possible all the time.
Yeah, it depends on the moment.
So it depends on the moment. But one of the things I was looking at with regard to the thicket is that one of the ways I think conditioning captures me in my attention is it can turn genuine excitement mm-hmm. into a thicket.
Genuine excitement into a thicket?
Yeah.
Say more.
And I think it does that by convincing me that I have to do something with the excitement.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
You know, that I have to make something happen, that I have to get caught up in thinking about this. And you know, one of the things it feels like conditioning does, well, we know this, it does all the time, is it captures what is authentic.
So it captures what is authentic, and the process you're looking at is it's the conversion of the excitement into something tangible that has to be done with it, thought about,
right.
formed, manifested.
And consumed all the energy.
Well, that's important, right? Because to me, that is what it's doing, is translating the energy of excitement
right.
to it.
Right.
Transferring the energy of excitement to it, like
right.
a giant voltage
right.
thing.
So I was appreciating that to remember, first of all, the catch, that happens.
Mm-hmm.
When I just get off and running, it's not my energy running anymore.
Yes.
But to remember that, that's happening, that's the thicket in the field.
That is the thicket.
To remember the field and that, to use the field as the disidentification tool.
So first of all, the awareness that that's a process. Second, that we can become aware of it while it's happening. And to remember that it's the thicket in the field in the sense of disidentifying from it and recognizing that the process is happening.
And that the field is full of possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And I have become caught, that's not what I like the image of the thicket, I've become caught in the dimensions of that particular set of thoughts.
Uh-huh.
And thinking that that's sort of all there is.
Yes.
And in fact, if I can just step back and see the whole field, the field is full of possibility. And then that process of stepping back itself opens me up to what those possibilities are.
Mm-hmm.
As long as I'm caught in that set of thoughts, I won't get there. I mean, I'm not available to it.
Mm-hmm. So being in the thoughts makes you not available to the field of possibility.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that it's the process allows us to step out of the thicket into the field of possibility. And the movement is really from conditioned karmic dissipation of energy to going back into the process of excitement.
Yeah, and what's important to that for me is that what led me into the thicket, what can lead me into the thicket, is something that feels good.
Uh-huh.
You know,
uh-huh.
I can see how I can get into a thicket feeling bad.
Yeah.
And it's also a real temptation to get into a thicket feeling good.
Yes.
Because I love to be excited.
Yes.
I love to plan. I love to see how things unfold and figure things out, you know. And there's a lot of charge in that for me. But if I take it over, if I
yes.
takes it over, then actually all the energy is being concentrated in this little tiny place, and all the much more available energy of excitement is actually being bled away.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really helpful to see that.
Yeah. So that so long if the I takes over the energy.
Yep.
So two important things, observations. One is that there is a possibility of the identity being something that feels good.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's less easy to discover that that's what's going on from the that because there's such a feeling good part. And that it's the I taking over the energy that we want to watch out for, because that's the dissipation of it. Because there is the experience of life living through us, manifesting whatever that excitement is into whatever form it needs to be, and that's very, very different from an I that feels good about doing something.
Yes, and the chances are that the way that I is figuring out how to do it is not going to actually happen.
Yes, and that seems to be an experience.
All the energy is going into that capsule.
Yes. And basically the I is only keeping itself alive, so what actually happens we miss.
Right, right. I've had the experience many times of having an idea about how to like build something.
Uh-huh.
And often in meditation, you know, going off on, well, I can do this and this and this, and I'll put this in. And then when I actually go to do it, it's entirely different.
It's yeah, well, and I think the experience that we have there is that we're present moment by moment to the insight that's creating in the moment,
yeah.
as opposed to the other experience, which is prefabrication, that has nothing to do with what's actually going on.
All it has to do with is creating the story that keeps me out of meditation.
Yeah, keeps you out of meditation and takes the energy away.
Right, yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Krista, go ahead.
What is a thicket?
It's a hedge, kind of a dense
rambles.
Oh,
Susan.
Well, I was.
Thanks for asking.
It just reminds me of, you know, that this is it.
Uh huh.
Thickets can actually be interesting. You know,
yes.
little things in them, and you know. But I noticed when people were talking that when I think of a field, ego pictures that for me. So it creates like this. Field, and then I start thinking, then I get attached to it. I start thinking, oh, that's how I should feel all the time.
Yes.
Like I would feel, like ego would thinks it would feel in this projected field.
Uh-huh.
Which completely takes me away from the whole thing is it. This is it. Everything that is arising in the moment is, you know, like the sitting still. It's still my favorite writing of Cher. You know, that everything that is arising in the moment, the kids arguing, the dog throwing up, you know, whatever, all the things that my head's just torturing me, all the things that I think should not be going on are actually it.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
They are the field.
Yes.
I doesn't think they're the field. They
yes.
don't look like the field should look. You know, arguing children and me screaming or whatever, you know, that's really not what it should look like.
Mm-hmm.
But what I was looking at as people were talking is that it's the thing inside that's determining what is the field and what isn't that seems like the problem.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. So let me make sure, because you're saying a lot of very, very cool things, and I don't want to lose you on it. So there's the awareness that egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate defines the experience that is ideal. And then compares what's actually going on to what is ideal and finding it faulty.
Yeah.
Right? This is not what
Bad.
It should be. But
if
that process, and I think what you're pointing at is, if that process that basically says this is ideal, compare it to what's really going on and finding it faulty, it doesn't exist, then the only experience we have is whatever's here is here.
Right.
And that's what this is it means.
Yeah. And as far as I can tell, because I'm doing the thing as well, the resting into it. And what I've been looking at is the practice of resting in the midst of a busy schedule.
Yes.
that it is possible to relax and rest when I move into whatever it is.
Yes.
The dishes, the walking,
yes.
the
not
folding
but
laundry,
how?
You know, I've been really practicing with and moving into the process in the brain, because I can get really frustrated with my own, what did he say, music and the calculus. You know, I mean, I don't like it when that's going on. But again, that's what's going on.
Yes.
So the possibility, it reminds me of the depression book. You know, the possibility is to bake a cake and be there.
Yes.
You know?
Well, total acceptance, right? Unconditional acceptance of what is embraces
right.
everything, including the thicket in the field. Because what the acceptance moves the thicket from something to be transcended or resisted or not to be there to simply what is, right?
And
it actually
not,
is the movement out of the judgmental
right.
process.
Yes,
yeah.
And it happened this morning. I mean, I couldn't hear anything. I mean, I was trying to listen to calculus and I mean, something profound was said and I was blank. I couldn't even catch it. I'm like, oh, what did they just? And I thought, well, I'm just gonna move into not you know, going in and out right now.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I just, instead of wishing I had heard the thing and wishing that for the rest of the group and missing everything else that was said, I thought, well, I am going to just be here right now in the struggle of going
yes.
in and out.
Uh-huh.
But rather than judging myself or wishing I was a perfect Zen student who could pay attention to everything everyone said in my own brain at the same time and be in the peaceful field, for God's sake, you know. All right, this is it. And then you started talking about how that could actually be fun. And I thought, all right, I'm just going to, in faith, trust her for a minute. Isn't feeling fun.
And then again, what is fun and what doesn't feel like
right,
fun, right?
The label. This
yeah.
is not it. That definition of karma, the incessant push toward what we think we deserve, my definition is the incessant push against what is.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I believe it's me. Ego is always, I mean, I'm just watching it,
mm-hmm.
always saying this is not it.
Mm-hmm.
This is not it. This is not it. Well, then what the heck is?
Well, but to me, what you're pointing out is such an important thing, right, Susan? Because karma is the incessant push towards what it is we deserve, but life is exactly the opposite to that. If this is not it, it has to be, right?
Yeah.
When we talk about how ego is what life is not.
Yes.
The definition of life of ego is not life.
Right.
Right? And so if
right.
it's telling you this is not it, it's the biggest clue that it is, including it.
Oh,
right?
That's good. Yes.
Right? Yeah. So
including
we know it's
it.
The ego
that's
push.
That's the tricky part, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, including it.
Including it. Because if we move into that place we were talking about, that restful place of being with life,
mm-hmm.
then what really is the gift of the thicket is to know that we can move.
Yes.
And that we're in the process of a different, moving to a different metaphor, the butterfly. Right? You go from the egg to the caterpillar, and the caterpillar is hungry and grumpy and whatever else, but it doesn't know that it's going to become the butterfly. And what we have the ability to know is we can be in the can be in the stage of the caterpillar metamorphosing to a butterfly, and that's an entire process, and we appreciate the process so we can accept the caterpillar for whatever it's going through.
When you gave the image, I was thinking there's this kid's book, The Hungry Caterpillar, or something like that, and it eats a lot as a caterpillar, and I thought, if I could just enjoy being a caterpillar,
yes,
taste the, you know,
yes.
move slow, you know, get
yes.
out of that, you know, I mean, just the whole...
Don't take it personally.
Yeah, it's just a part of
yes.
the process.
Part of
and
the process.
A necessary part.
And
this,
necessary
again,
part.
This is it.
Yes,
this
we have to burn it. The karma.
Yes, that's right. And it can feel kind of, you know, relieving as we, you know, I told her, like, that's overheating. You know, we take our jackets off as we talk and the sweat pouring down because it is burning.
Yes.
Simply by living life.
Simply by living life. And I would project that what you're really pointing at is the movement we make from the conditioned process of judgment to the unconditional acceptance of what is so. So anything,
right.
everything is accepted. And that is what the gift of the karma is, right?
Mm-hmm.
That we can move to that place of universally accepting all karma impersonal.
Including hating it.
Including hating
it. You know, the whole thing, the expansion gets, you know, I don't have to like it.
No. Or it doesn't have to like it.
It doesn't have to like it. And I,
because in that unconditional place, this is it, accepts it, right?
Yes.
Because like and dislike is only in the ego place.
I know. Boy, am I there a lot. It's humbling.
Yeah.
It's humbling.
Well, and I would project that the conversation doesn't allow you to just be in the place of noticing how much you are in acceptance.
Oh, no. It backs up and says there's something wrong with
that. That's right.
Yeah. So it backs itself up.
Yeah.
Until I have conversations like this and see the truth, because the truth is I'm seeing it. The truth is I'm here. The truth is I'm going to...
And then you're motivated to have more conversations like this so that we can keep seeing it.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
thank you. We are at 11:30, Anna.
Okay.
But I think we can take 2 seconds, 2 minutes to talk about what it is you're looking at.
Thank you. I had an amazing encounter this week with a caterpillar that was just part of an amazing practice week of unconditional love training.
Mm-hmm.
I saw the caterpillar and it had this amazing patterning on it,
mm-hmm.
and this amazing very vivid blue color, and attention went up. Oh, I wonder if the butterfly is going to have a blue color, or if just the blue color is on the caterpillar because it is. It's no,
mm-hmm.
no reason.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Just that exuberant yes, you know.
Uh-huh.
And what I saw in that moment was, why is it, you know, in these stories of transformation, the caterpillar, the ugly duckling, these things in this transformation narrative are ugly before they transform. Uh-huh. You know, we were all rhapsodizing the other night about butterflies as mirrors of authenticity, and I had the mirror of authenticity in the caterpillar.
Mm-hmm.
And what, of course, the big practice week has been that acceptance of an experience of identification, or, you know, just acceptance of all that was going on.
Uh-huh. In other words, the conditioned process would celebrate the butterfly and vilify the caterpillar.
Yes.
And we recognize that it's only the conditioned process that would vilify the caterpillar and celebrate the butterfly. So dropping it allows us to be in acceptance of the beauty of the caterpillar.
Mm-hmm.
And of the phase of it.
And truly attending lovingly and closely to the caterpillar instead of waiting for the butterfly.
Yes. Well, and it points to all, it sort of brings together everything we've been talking about, right? That it's not that the ticket is only an obstacle if the conditioned process is operating.
Yes.
In other words, if you are in life, in the process of attention, in the process of caring, in the process of acceptance, there is no less beauty in the caterpillar than is in the butterfly. And we have that equanimous acceptance of all aspects of life knowing itself.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when this week an identity was screaming, I'm real, I'm real, I'm real, and there was a feeling of being identified with something hateful, judgmental, cruel, mean, paranoid, all of that, there was an awareness that nothing in the universe that's real needs to make a case for itself being real.
Mm-hmm.
That was the...
Uh-huh. Well, in other words, what was witnessing the screaming was the unconditional acceptance, that the same acceptance that was viewing the caterpillar,
yes.
Right? In other words, that's what's real.
Exactly.
The awareness that is witnessing a process that conditioning would label as ugly,
mm-hmm.
but from the place of acceptance and love.
Yeah.
And that is the transformation, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.